It's in use in another state, Arizona or somewhere?
That's a receiver that's manufactured in Arizona.
Manufactured in Arizona. Well, is it being used anywhere in the world by human beings? This is a receiver that's being used on whales, is that right?
It has been used basically for animals. That's and I understand a similar device is being looked into in New Zealand.
Is a device like that being used anywhere in the world on human beings?
To the best of my knowledge, I don't believe so. I'm not aware of. May I ask, Scott? Are you aware of it being used anywhere else?
My name is Scott Russell, and I'm co-chairman of the fund. This is the receiving device, and as Mr. Hitchcock has indicated, it is used basically for wildlife, and it is used in the scientific community. Some of these scientists are in extremely remote areas to try and track these animals. It is being used by some of those researchers, yes. It has been used in some cases for people in homes that have got various stages of mental dementia, such as Alzheimer's, where they wander off and they can be located. But again, the situation is far removed from a mountain wilderness and the extreme weather conditions that we're talking about. Does that answer your...
You think the mountain wilderness is more of a wilderness than the urban wilderness?
Well,
let's leave that for now.
Okay.
Where are they being used for people who have Alzheimer's and dementia?
There is one of these transceivers that was used in Portland by a doctor whose wife had this condition and wandered off. It is not being used on a commercial basis at this point in time. There is a parallel study going on at this time to have such a device for people with mental problems.
Who is the manufacturer? What's the name of the manufacturer?
This particular manufacturer is Telonix, and they're located in Mesa, Arizona. We have received similar comments and concerns by all of the people who submitted equipment to us. It's not unique to this particular manufacturer. All people involved in this were very concerned about the liability aspects of their participation in this program.
Who else is manufacturing devices like this?
There are manufacturers in New Zealand. We have manufacturers in this country, and most of this equipment is used for tracking either animals or dogs. Wildlife Materials is a manufacturer in Illinois. Advanced Telemetry Systems in Minnesota.
Wildlife Materials?
Yes, Wildlife Materials, Inc. They're in Carbondale, Illinois.
What have you found? Were you involved in testing on the mountain, too?
Yes.
Okay. What have you found out about the way this works on the mountain?
Well, we have found out that this particular unit worked better than any of the others that we tested. Some of the conditions that we had, we lowered this device on a climbing rope down into a glacier 75 feet from the surface of the ice, approximately 2.5 miles from Timberline Lodge. We could still receive the signal from it, and we were able to indicate direction and find the unit buried on the mountain.
Have you found any place yet on Mount Hood where you can't get the signal?
Not yet.
And you're going to test some of the places in more remote areas of Mount Hood to see if there are some, what did you call those? Not blind spots, but...
Yes.
Did you call them blind spots?
That's correct. We have an extensive program lined out wherein we sent a letter of inquiry out to various people involved in search and rescue operations over the last 50 years to indicate exact spots that they could recall as being troublesome areas.
What kind of vulnerability does it have for equipment failure?
Very little. This equipment is completely sealed, hermetically sealed. It'll take terrific shock. We've got the advantage of approximately 20 years of research of animals trying to beat this thing up. Wolves in particular will will gnaw one off of their partner. So they're extremely durable, and I have an extreme amount of confidence in the quality of this equipment.
I suppose one of the lawyer witnesses would be better to ask than in what area there would be a duty breach in terms of a question of negligence. I guess we should save that for them.
I think so.
Thank you.
Where did you get that device?
This device is manufactured by the Telonix company in Arizona.
Where did you get it, though, is what I'm asking.
Where did I get it?
Yes.
I got it from their factory.
Is that the only one that exists in Oregon?
No, there's another one sitting at Timberline Lodge right now, and there's one more in that white bag.
Could I order one if I wanted to?
Without a research grant, probably not.
This is still in the experimental stage, is that it?
Yes, that's correct. This unit is a test unit for us to use. It's transmitting right now and has been since the middle of December.
And have you received from the manufacturer some price that you could be supplied these devices at?
We have talked tentative prices at this time. The exact configuration may vary depending on our particular concerns as to how long it should transmit and its durability and other factors.
Now, to your knowledge, is there any legal reason, any law that would prevent you from using this device now in Oregon?
Yes, there is. We need the cooperation of the federal communications people in order to have license to use this. This is a transmitting device, and it would be prohibited from general use at this time.
All right. You've been doing some experiments with that on Mount Hood, as I understand it.
That's correct.
And you probably had to get some FCC dispensation to do that.
That's correct.
Right? So the only thing that stands in the way of really putting these out for general use would be an FCC okay, then?
That's that plus this liability issue that we face today.
Well, I'm asking you whether there's any law that you know of in Oregon that would prevent the general use of that, assuming you got FCC approval.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Hamby.
In your investigation and your research around the world, I assume, when you mentioned New Zealand, it was my understanding that there is currently a product, and it's not an ELT as such, but is frequently used by Alaskan bush pilots, mountaineers, etc. And it is a product manufactured in New Zealand. Were you aware of it, or did you check with Alaska officials on their rather unique transmitter?
I've talked with the park ranger in Denali National Park, and he did not indicate such a device to me. He did indicate that they have encouraged and at times have required the use of two-way voice communication equipment. Two-way voice communication equipment was very closely looked at by this committee and was not selected due to a multitude of disadvantages and problems. There is a device that we tested from New Zealand that is similar to this equipment. This is the receiving unit. That little thing there will find this transmitter. Their equipment was not as effective on Mount Hood as this one by a significant difference.
This is significantly the best piece of equipment that we have had an opportunity to test.
But you're not aware of BLM or anyone in Alaska even testing this particular unit?
No, we're not.
No, you're not. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Did you indicate that you had, have you received some actual correspondence from a manufacturer that said the manufacturer wouldn't put this item out for use in Oregon?
That is correct.
Okay.
Without some type of protection that some type of a transient failure could occur. This thing could be checked out and in perfect working order, but again, it's a complicated electrical device, and it's made of particles from the Earth, and they can fail, as did the Challenger spaceship. That's the sort of thing that we're talking about.
So the manufacturer has written and said, indicated to you that unless the Oregon legislature makes an exception among all manufactured products that are sold in Oregon for this particular device, that it would be reluctant to make it available for our use. Is that it?
Words to that effect. They would be reluctant to be involved in this project without some type of protection.
All right. I'd very much like to have a copy of that letter presented to committee counsel, because I'd like to see what they have to say in that regard.
I have that with me.
Fine. If you're able to leave that, it would be appreciated. Otherwise, you could just send a copy and we would duplicate it. Or actually, if you want to give it to the gentleman over here in the red tie, he'll make a copy for all of us then.
Okay.
Sometime during the hearing. Now, speaking of the hearing, as Senator Wire said, we've had a chance, Mr. Hitchcock, to read your testimony here. It's 10 minutes to 4, and we've got a lot of bills to consider, and I'm going to have to move right along here. So if you don't mind, we'll submit your testimony as assuming that would be what you would present to us orally there.
Yes, I would like to emphasize, however, that over and above the liability of the manufacturer, in 1976, we were in the same position. At that particular time, we were going to use CB radios, which you could buy anywhere. And we had collected the money to buy them. Once it was collected, we could not find anyone who would be willing to give them out. In order to have this device effective, you have to have a distribution system. And we could not find anyone who would give them out, because if they gave that to you and you took it on the mountain and it did not work, they were afraid of the liability issue. So over and above the manufacturer. If you find a device that the manufacturer would make available to you, we have a real problem in setting up a distribution center or a distribution system.
Okay, fine. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Covers that. But the word
Chairman, I'm Randall Kester, and I have filed a written statement, and unless the committee has questions about the particular form of the bill, I'll just stand on that statement. I can say, however, that the comment from the manufacturer, I quoted in my statement, which is in the committee files, the sentence from the letter which the chairman asked about. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to discuss the form of the bill.
Well, yes, I do have a question, I think, Judge, if you don't mind.
Chairman, for the aid for the aid of the members, the quotation is in the middle of page 2. It says, we cannot participate in this program unless legislation is provided.
Are you, Judge, are you the one that drafted the amendment now that we have before us that's apparently replaced the original bill?
I participated in it. Some of the language is mine. Some of it is, I think, from Mr. Kafuri, but we worked together on it.
All right. Now, would you, did you really intend the last sentence, the last clause, particularly of the Section 2, subsection 2, to have the breadth that it has? For the way I read it is that no one can maintain an action for injuries or loss of life against any manufacturer or supplier of this device, no matter what the circumstances, regardless of the degree of fault or anything else. Do you read that way?
That's a little broader than I originally had suggested, but I think this is a better form, yes. It gives more completely the protection which the manufacturer requested and without which we won't have the use of the device.
All right. Do you have any concerns at all that singling out a single product would be in conflict with the rule of law that I know you're familiar with, that particularly the provision that that would prohibit any class distinction among groups or individuals? I'm thinking, of course, obviously we couldn't say that a defective Ford car is not going to, that the Ford Motor Company would be absolved from injuries caused by a defective Ford car, but if you're driving another kind of car, that you might be subject to liability. I know you know what I mean.
I think I would agree that you couldn't distinguish between Fords and Chryslers, but you could distinguish between a Ford car and a tractor, for example, because they serve a different purpose. And I think this bill was intended to meet that problem by pointing out the fact that the use of electronic devices and a search and rescue operation is under unpredictable circumstances. It's by its nature an emergency. It's an unusual situation, and I think that justifies an exemption from the general product liability situation.
All right. Now, apart from the products liability law, what's your view on exempting an individual from ordinary negligence or gross negligence or intentional conduct? Do you think that the legislature could do that?
Well, I think it could. Certainly we had a gross negligence statute for automobiles for many years, distinguishing between ordinary and gross negligence, and some statutes obviously distinguish between intentional acts and others. I don't really see any constitutional problem as far as the bill is concerned.
I just wondered, I was trying to think here of any, whether we've got any other law where a particular person or class of persons would be kind of exempted across the board as distinguished from exempted, like with a guest passenger case where you distinguish between ordinary negligence and gross negligence. Certainly we couldn't exempt drivers of cars from negligence, period. I don't think we could we?
Well, it probably wouldn't be a good idea. I think if you look at the two parts of this bill, the one dealing with people and the one dealing with equipment, the one dealing with people is patterned exactly after an existing statute dealing with skiers, which says that they assume the risks of the sport. And this uses exactly the same language in talking about mountain climbing. So to that extent, the legislature's already crossed that bridge.
All right, any other questions of Judge Kester? Thank you, Judge, for being here. Yeah, Senator Wires.
This Section 2, Subsection 1, is assuming the risk. How far does that go? Where's the boundary around that, assuming the risk? I haven't read the ski. If you're talking about the ski operator's limitation of liability, is that what you're talking about? The legislature already passed that?
Yes.
Well, I haven't read that recently, but as I recall, we crossed that bridge with quite a few careful craftings of it. It's not this is appears to me on first blush to be assuming the risk of the broadest sort.
Well, if I may call attention, ORS 30.975 is the skier statute. It's very brief. I might just take a moment and read it. It says, in accordance with ORS 18.470 and notwithstanding ORS 18.4752, an individual who engages in the sport of skiing, alpine or Nordic, accepts and assumes the inherent risks of skiing insofar as they are reasonably obvious, expected, or necessary. Now, that's exactly the same language that we've adopted in Section 2.1 of this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kefouri, go ahead.
Stephen Kefouri, representing the Oregon Mountain Signal Rescue Fund. If I might elucidate on that answer a little bit, I think what your concern is that Section Sub 1 of Section 2, standing by itself, might be extraordinarily broad. I think it has to be read in conjunction with Section 2, and that's what Judge Kester, with the point he was making regarding the skiing statute. The skiing statute does not go on then to exempt anyone from liability. What it goes on to do is to say that you must report within a certain period of time your intention to file a claim. So that has not caused any problems with having a statement of assumption of the risk followed by an explanation of when that risk is assumed. And what we're doing here, Senator Wires, is saying that it's not assumed for everything. It's only assumed in conjunction with Section 2.
Where does it say only as set forth in Section 2? It says in accordance with ORS 18470 and notwithstanding ORS 18.475 sub 2.
If you wanted to change, excuse me. I think the chair wants somebody to.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Senator Wires, the answer might be if you have to read Section 2 sub 1 in connection with Section 1 sub 1, which defines the inherent risks which are being assumed. And it's limited to, it's includes but is not limited to those dangers or conditions, the risk of which is an integral part of these activities. In other words, those risks which are fundamental to engaging in the sport are the ones that are assumed.
The question arose earlier about the general applicability or perhaps using this as a precedent, and what we're trying to say in this bill is that this mountain climbing is a unique sport. People do it because of the challenge, not in spite of the challenge. Where other activities people take up, for example, skiing or driving a car, they do those things in spite of the challenge. But when in mountain climbing, you do it largely to overcome the challenge. And because of that, we think there's a unique situation here that those people who purposefully put themselves into a dangerous position ought to be allowed to assume that risk. And part of that assumption of that risk is that they are not going to then sue the person who has manufactured or distributed a device to come and help get them, should they become lost.
Well, does the word distributor here, the way I read it, I thought the distributor was the person who got it from the manufacturer distributed it to the seller.
That's why we say manufacturer, distributor, seller, or supplier.
Now, supplier, is that the person at the wilderness jump-off spot that is renting it?
This could be, depending on the situation. It might be the school headmaster who is taking the youngsters on a climb and passes them out to the kids. It might be the Boy Scout leader. It might be Mr. Constam vicariously through one of his employees at Timberline Lodge. The exact process for how these things are going to be distributed has not been worked out yet. This is still in the working stage. What we're saying is whoever it is.
This would mean then if we pass this law and Lodge or Outpost Manager X has them sitting there in a room, and has hired somebody to operate that room, and is therefore responsible for their acts, like people are under our law. And that person decides that they don't want to work that day and closes up. And even though there's signs all around the place that say you ought to have this before you go up the mountain, there's some young people there getting ready to go up the mountain, and they can't get it because for some erratic reason the place has decided not to supply them that day, and the person got hurt, then the lodge or whoever would not be responsible.
Well, no, this only has to do with using the device. In that case, the device would not have been used.
Well, you say non-use isn't part of use?
No. Use is use. Non-use is
no
not
no person
use.
May maintain an action against the manufacturer, distributor, seller, or supplier of such device for any personal injury, loss of life, property damage, or loss incurred during the wilderness travel or mountain climbing. I don't see there where it says the supplier, once they've supplied it. So somebody is back there in the room, and they decide to use these devices they're back there, they've had a party the night before, and they're back there pounding the device down with a beer bottle during the party, and they then rent it the next day to some people and say this is safe to use up the mountain. Under this, that would be exempt from liability.
Yes, purposefully so. What we're saying is that in ordinary life, if you're driving an automobile, you have an expectation that that automobile is fit for its intended use. And anyone who's had that automobile under their care has not injured it. And if they have injured it, then they ought to be liable for it. Because driving a car, you don't expect, it's not part of the reason that you drive a car that you may be putting your life in danger.
It isn't?
No, you may expect that it may happen, but that's not the reason that you drive. your reason that you drive is to get from here to there. It's a very different situation. Part of the reason that you climb a mountain is because it's dangerous. If you took all the danger out of mountain climbing, people wouldn't do it. And what we're saying is that if people purposely put
intentionally destroys this device and renders it non-useful and then gives it to somebody, tells them now this works under this language, they wouldn't, since people who seek this kind of risk, they should assume all risk.
That's what we're saying. We're not guaranteeing, we do not want these to be guaranteed, period, that they may not work.
Okay.
The alternative.
I understand what you've got here. And I'll just bet you if you asked the people who went up that mountain if they'd think this was a good idea.
Well, the people
I'll tell you what I'd think. I went up the mountain. I can tell you that because I have been up that mountain. And
I
used some
mountain,
equipment. And if somebody told me after I got back down, hey, that cramp on there you had, if somebody had intentionally fixed that so it would fall off your foot, or for me, the thing that didn't work was the ice axe, that I couldn't get deep enough in the ice. Somebody intentionally sawed through that and bondoed it up so it would look like it was fine. And since you like to take risks so much, Jan, that was perfectly okay. I don't think I would have related to that very well. But,
Mr. Chairman,
I'm not
I
in the business of selling them or renting them, so I guess I have a different point of view.
Pardon me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all
could
right.
I think nobody would have any objection if you wanted to add a phrase there saying, except for intentional acts or acts intended to cause harm. I don't think anybody is really trying to protect one who would do, as you described, beat up on one of these devices with a beer bottle. But
well, let me put another what if to you. What if the manufacturer of this device here never tested it at all? I mean, just put this thing together and then sold it to these people here in Oregon as a device that was really going to help save mountain climbers, and they went out there and the thing never worked at all. Now, under the language of this amendment, of course, there would be no claim at all that you could bring against that manufacturer for failing to even give it a cursory test. Totally, in my opinion, unfair to the user. Am I right? That's the way the thing is drafted, isn't it? Isn't it? Is that, number one, I'm sure it's right what I said, and number two, the question for this committee, is it good public policy to say to the manufacturer of products in Oregon, no matter how careless you are, how grossly negligent you are, how reckless you are, that in certain circumstances, Oregon consumers are going to have to assume the risk? Don't you think what we really want to do is encourage the manufacture and the availability of this kind of device, but go to the fullest extent possible to assure its reliability, but you know, not at the expense of saying you don't have to test this thing before you sell it to us here in Oregon. Shouldn't there be some at least minimal safeguards for Oregon consumers on just about any kind of a device?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps the practical answer to that is that there's very little alternative. Either we give them some protection or we won't get the device at all, and then the climbers are going to be no worse off than they were before because they didn't have the device at all.
We've been given, I guess this is kind of a long letter I was asking about. Apparently it's 18 pages long, the letter from the manufacturer. However, it's difficult for me to read this last page here and understand whether they're talking about an invitation that was given to them, the manufacturer, to participate in some experimental project here in Oregon, or whether they're talking about supplying this to your group. I wonder if would it be too difficult? I wonder if I could have the entire letter to look at, or at least enough of it so that I could put this last page in context. Okay.
It's mostly full of technical data.
Well, I can skip that part. I get the impression here, though, in reading this, that these people down in Arizona were asked to participate in some kind of an outdoor project here in Oregon to experiment with this device, and they said that they couldn't do it.
I have in front of me, Senator, about a 30-page response from this manufacturer to our request for proposal that we develop, and it addresses the conditions under which this device would be operating. And you're welcome to read this over, and they describe in depth what their equipment will do, as far as the problem that, the hypothetical problem that you've posed, that would quite easily be handled because each of these devices would be available to ensure its proper operation when a climber checked out and left Timberline Lodge. I wouldn't want to go up there, you hand me a black box, and I can't tell if it's working or not. I would want to know that, in fact, it was working before I went up there, and our distribution system would ensure that that not only would be working when the climber checked it out from a distributor, but at the wilderness boundary or point of departure, in this case, Timberline Lodge, we would, at this point, are anticipating having a detector that the person could verify that it was operating. The problem that the manufacturer is very much concerned about is the beer bottle incident that you described occurring up on the mountain, which is certainly out of the manufacturer's control and certainly out of our control.
I know what this, I think Senator Wires was talking about the amendment here, which would include anybody up on the mountain who gave this device to somebody else, is not confined just to the manufacturer. See? So I think here's the concern I sense that some of us are kind of wrestling with here. And I think that you all would agree with this principle that we have a situation that we want to try and correct. We have an incident that we don't want to be repeated, but